On behalf of Delaware First Media and the University of Delaware Center for Political Communication, welcome to Delaware Debates 2018. I'm Ralph Begleiter. Delaware Debates is also supported by the American Cancer Society's Cancer Action Network and by the University of Delaware. This debate features candidates in the race for Delaware's single seat in the U.S. House of Representatives. The Democratic Party's nominee for Congress is Lisa Blunt Rochester. Running as the Republican candidate for Congress is Scott Walker. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
We're conducting tonight's debate as a conversation, and both candidates have agreed to rules for the occasion. There will be no formal opening statements. I'll begin with a question for both candidates, and they've agreed to hold themselves to 90-second responses. We'll also include in this debate questions recorded by students at Delaware State University and at the University of Delaware. Now, although we're not having opening statements, we will welcome a formal closing statement from each candidate. The candidates on stage have also agreed to participate in this debate with some rules for our live audience here on the University of Delaware campus. Audience members have entered Mitchell Hall, understanding that this is not a pep rally. There will be no cheering or applause. This debate is about the candidates, not about the audience. I'll keep my questions short, and I'll ask the candidates to answer concisely so we can cover a lot of ground tonight. The candidates will answer in the order they determined with a backstage pre-debate coin toss. My first question goes to Lisa Blunt Rochester. Do you see the 2018 election, the midterm elections, as a referendum on President Trump? And if so, or if not, does that matter in your race?
Well, first, I want to thank you, Ralph, and I want to thank University of Delaware and Delaware Public Media for hosting this event. You know, I think that's a great question to start off with, because my run in 2016, it was the first time I had run for anything. And it was interesting because at that time, Emily's List, which was an organization that helps women around the country, had seen about 900 women express interest in running. This year, it's over 40,000. And I think that part of that is due in large part to the presidency and what we have seen over the past 2 years. And so I think the enthusiasm, the fact that people are stepping up and getting engaged, is really representative of the changes that we've seen in the past 2 years. And I do think that it is a referendum on the policies and the politics that we have seen over these past 2 years. So I look forward to seeing what comes. We expect a record number of new candidates in Congress. And I think people want to see change, and they want to see people step up and serve. And so I think that's what we're going to be seeing.
All right. Scott Walker, is it a referendum on Donald Trump and his policies? And if so, does that make a difference in this race?
Well, I think any election is a referendum, of course. However, I don't think that Main Street America is in particular interested in Donald Trump. And so they're interested in their standard of living, in their income, in paying their bills, and they are not that concerned with Donald Trump. Now, some of your party organizations and the party stalwarts are probably interested in Mr. Trump and trying to sell this election as a referendum on Mr. Trump. But his economic policies have worked so far. And so I don't know whether that would be a wise thing for them to do, because he has turned the economy around. And in closing, like I said, people want change. I agree with the Congresswoman. People want change. And every election is a referendum. And this election is very important. I think America is at a crossroads. And we're going to follow through with the changes that have been made so far. And we're going to turn this economy around permanently.
All right. As a follow-up to that, both of you are running for an office that involves going to Washington, D.C. and serving the state of Delaware from Washington, D.C. So I want to ask you whether you think the constitutional checks and balances system that has been in effect in Washington for hundreds of years now is working effectively in Washington right now. Congressman?
Congresswoman? If I could, I just want to also add to the last question. You know, as Scott has mentioned, some people are doing better But a lot of people aren't doing better in this economy. Wages have been stagnant, and the changes that we've seen in terms of the trajectory really started during the Obama administration. And so I just want to be clear, the reason why you're seeing this influx of excitement is because people are concerned. They're very concerned, not just about the economics, but also about our standing in the world. On your question of checks and balances, that's probably one of the biggest reasons why people are concerned about this election and Mr. Trump, because we feel like there isn't that check and balance that's happening. You know, so to me, that's actually part of that referendum.
All right, Mr. Walker, checks and balances.
Well, yeah, I'm a little concerned about Congress interfering with the president's initiatives. And in that regard, I mean, it's good to have a healthy competition between the three branches of government in terms of input. I don't like to see the Supreme Court changing laws that Congress has passed by judicial fiat. I don't like to see that. And like I said, this obstructionism from Congress on the reforms that President Trump has proposed and the Supreme Court nominees and all that, it's a healthy sign, but when it gets in the way of progress and really does damage to the process, I don't like that.
All right, we're gonna go to our first student question. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say the Republicans control both houses.
Okay, so you'll have an opportunity. Go to our first student question. This is from a junior who's a public policy and women and gender studies double major here at the University of Delaware. Let's listen to the question.
Should Congress and the courts hold President Trump to the same standard regarding sexual misconduct and the treatment of women as the Me Too movement has held other politicians, government leaders, and business leaders?
Okay, Mr. Walker, you're up first on this one.
I think that's fair. I think it's all fair to, if we're going to have a standard, we judge everybody by the same standard. And I don't have any problem with that.
All right, Congresswoman.
I definitely feel that he should be held to the same standard. I think it's part of what you're seeing in terms of people standing up and saying, you know, enough is enough. And so in terms of, you know, even this most recent hearing, even as recent as today, you know, calling someone a horse face, that's inappropriate. It's not presidential, and it is indicative of some of that behavior. And so I definitely agree that he should be held to the same standard.
Okay, brief answer on the follow-up question here is, if you both said that he should be held accountable, does Congress do that? Who does that? Mr. Walker?
Well, can you reframe your question a little bit?
You both said that the president should be held to the same standards regarding sexual misconduct
yes.
as politicians, government leaders, and business yes. leaders are being held in past years since the Me Too movement started. My question is, who does that holding to account? Is that Congress that has to act?
It's Congress, it's the media, it's the people. That's what the people, you know, the power is with the people. And so the people, I don't think there would be much disagreement, well, no matter what your party or political connection, that the accountability, you know, has to be uniform, it has to be consistent.
Congresswoman Rochester, who holds the president accountable?
Well, I mean, one of the main reasons why we have a Congress is to provide those checks and balances and also to, you know, really be there to say, for example, in this situation, myself and other members of the House actually reached out to our Republican colleagues and our leadership, Republican leadership, to say we need to hold them accountable. We signed a letter to all say that. It has not bore any fruit because that leadership did not want to investigate or move forward in it. So we do have a responsibility. That's part of our role.
Another student has asked a question on this same general topic. This is a Delaware State University student who's a sophomore in political studies and law studies at DSU. Let's listen.
Do you believe that there is a negative culture in regards to sexual assault in America? And if so, what would you do to change that culture in regards to how we respond to sexual assault accusations and how we treat victims of it?
Congresswoman, you're up first on this one. Yeah.
You know, I think part of even running during this campaign, hearing some of the rhetoric, it does let you know that it's part of the culture. And one of the things that I've been involved in is being on legislation and also really stepping forward to say that, you know, we have to be held accountable for these things. So for example, whether it's in our workplaces, do we have the appropriate training? Whether we have non-disclosure agreements in workplaces, those should be banned. And so I'm one of the individuals who signed on to a bill. I'm actually one of the prime sponsors with Kamala Harris and others called the Empower Act. And it is focused on assuring that we don't have these kinds of things and create this environment.
Mr. Walker, you're up on this one.
Yes, we've got a long ways to go in the terms of sexual harassment in the workplace, in education, everywhere. We've got a long ways to go. And so this is a very healthy phenomenon we're seeing. And I'm in agreement with the Democrats on this. You know, there's just no room for any dispute that we have a serious problem and that it was much worse, you know, when I was coming up, but it's still very, very bad. And standing in the way of women making the same as men and getting paid for the work that they do, they're still underpaid. And I really think that the sexual harassment thing, the Me Too movement, is a great thing.
All right. Switching to another aspect of our political scene nationally, do you support the use of social media, for example, Twitter or Facebook, to announce national public policy? Should Congress take some action on the use of social media to make public policy announcements? Congresswoman, you're up first.
Well, it's funny. I was thinking about social media earlier today because even in this campaign, watching some of the use of social media, social media has its positives and we know it has its negatives. The positive is people are engaged at levels that they've never been engaged before. The negative is a president should not be using Twitter to signal things or to make policy. That to me, it's more issue not of whether social media should be regulated, but whether people have the right judgment and know how to use social media. That to me is more of an issue. So is it Congress's role to tell someone to not use social media or not? I would not say that, but I would say it's inappropriate for candidates or for the president or others to use social media as a way to shame people or a way to even put out public policy that impacts all of us. It doesn't make sense.
Mr. Walker, the use of social media?
I think social media is a revolution in terms of the people speaking out and the input of the people to government, and it's a tremendous boon to free speech. And any regulation of the internet or social media is absolutely the worst thing we could ever think of, because this is free speech, and this is America. We have the First Amendment, and no other country has the First Amendment. And it's the First Amendment for a reason. It's the most important amendment.
Wow.
And so that's, I'm all for it.
I just want to reiterate, just like we have free speech, we all know we can't go into a building and yell fire. There are appropriate times and uses for social media. You know, sharing things that are private to other people, it's something that you kind of cross a line. And so, again, I think on the one area we really do agree that it is an incredible tool for democratization, for commerce. You can name all of the great things, but it also can be a place for bullying, intimidation, and misinformation. And so we do have to be careful.
Okay, and do you want to make another comment on this?
Well, again, you know, I'm all for it. And any form of communication always has the potential to be abused and misused. But the key thing is we've got to have these tools available to people to express themselves with. And that's more important than worrying about if it comes out wrong or if it offends somebody. Look, you got to speak. People want to speak, and it's up for us, the leaders, to listen. And so we got to have social media for that. I depend on it in my campaign.
All right. One more question about the president. Should the House of Representatives, in which both of you are trying to get to become a member, begin impeachment proceedings against President Trump in the next session of Congress? If so, why? If not, why not? Mr. Walker?
Well, I think if he's done something impeachable, sure, he should be impeached. I don't see anything that he's done that would warrant impeachment right now. And I thought that the whole thing with Bill Clinton was unjustified. So, no, I don't favor impeaching him right now. There's no evidence. There's nothing there right now.
Okay.
Nothing.
Congresswoman?
Well, first of all, I support holding our leaders accountable. I think the question right now and the concern that we have right now is ensuring that the Mueller investigation is protected and not tampered with. I think the other issue is looking at whether Rod Rosenstein would be fired. You know, to me, those are the questions and those are the things that we have to look at. It's premature in my mind to talk impeachment. But I definitely think we need to protect the investigation. We need to see where it ends up. And I also believe that, you know, this president, the fact that this is so much on his mind makes you believe where there's smoke, maybe there's fire.
All right, a couple of questions on national policy matters. I'm going to ask both of you. One of you is in office, one of you is not. So how did you vote or would you have voted on the federal tax overhaul of December 2017, and why did you vote that way, or why would you vote that way? Congresswoman?
I voted no for the bill, and it was really an opportunity, a missed opportunity, I feel, as a country. It was 30 years since we actually overhauled the tax system, and so I was looking at things like, is it simplifying the system, as we were being told? Is it going to promote growth? What will it do to our debt, and is it fair? Are more people going to, are a small group of people going to benefit from it, or are we all going to share in the benefits? It did not turn out that way. As a matter of fact, we had a teletown hall meeting, and it was 11,000 Delawareans called in on that call, which was incredible to me. And many people expressed their concerns about this tax bill, and my biggest concern is really the long-term impact of it, the debt. And what that means for Social Security, what does that mean for Medicare, what does that mean for everyday people and their pocketbooks? A lot of people told me they didn't see that boom that was promised. But that to me was why I voted no. And again, I saw it as a missed opportunity.
Mr. Walker, how would you have voted had you been in Congress?
Oh, I would have voted in favor of the tax cut. Look, this country was founded on a tax problem. So, you know, the more taxes we add on, the bigger government gets, and the further the deficit goes up. So there's two things that happen when you get a tax cut. Number one, you defund government. President Trump made a big mistake by borrowing a lot of money in addition to having a tax cut. So there was a trade-off, and you know there was nothing got done, essentially. Also, the second thing is you put money in people's pockets when you have a tax cut. All you out there, you know, you get money in your pockets. The rich get money in their pockets too. What do? With it? They spend it. They invest it. That creates jobs, and that creates more income to tax. And so when you enact a tax cut, you're essentially guaranteeing you're going to get more tax revenue. That's called the Laffer curve. And it's cause and effect. So yes, more tax cuts. We need more.
All right, you raised, both of you actually mentioned the issue, but you raised the issue of you get more revenue from taxes. Just this past few days, observers of the revenue stream to the United States reported that tax revenues actually declined to the federal government as a result of the increase in December, as a result of the corporations not paying those taxes into the federal government. But my question to you is, the law that you said you'd vote for and you voted against is almost universally predicted to increase the federal deficit by about $1 trillion. You just complained about the federal deficit. So how would that be addressed? How would you address that, Mr. Walker?
Well, the president borrowed money, and there's your $1 trillion. He borrowed money. What good's a tax?
What would you do about it?
What would I do if I was him?
Yeah. Not if you were him. Oh, if you were in Congress, you're running for Congress.
I would defund and close down a lot of agencies that are doing no good, that are consuming our national treasury, like HUD, like the CDC isn't doing too much for the health of Americans. And there's agencies, education's not doing anything. You know, I would just defund these agencies and take that money and use it to pay our deficit down with, or invest it in other agencies that are more productive.
All right, Congresswoman Rochester, how about you? How would you deal with the deficit problem?
Well, first of all, even looking at our debt as a result of that tax bill, I mean, was it $2.5 trillion? This is our future that we're talking about, And Mr. Walker talked about different programs or whole agencies that could be cut. But those agencies do provide benefit to our national economy and our security. And so everything from education you mentioned to HUD, these. So for me, the issue is more, how do you really govern? How do you sit down and say, let's really look at these agencies, not let's take one big slice? Because really where the money is being talked about, where we're being told it would come from, is Social Security and Medicare, not these agencies that you just mentioned. So I think, again, this was a missed opportunity. It was a bad bill, and that's why I voted no.
All right, we're going to move on to another domestic issue area now raised by a student from Delaware State University, a senior political science major. Let's listen.
Due to multiple mass shootings in the country, do you think gun restrictions are needed? And how do you plan on addressing what seems to be an epidemic of mass shootings?
Congresswoman Rochester, you're up first on this one.
This is probably one of the issues that I've heard about most up and down our state in our schools. I've talked to teachers, I've talked to students, I've talked to parents, and whether it's in school or in community, this has caused a lot of fear and angst. It's the one issue too that I hear people, the majority of people say they want to see something done. To me, there are common sense approaches that we can take. Everything from banning assault weapons to making sure that we have research at places like the CDC. For over 20 years, they were banned pretty much from doing any research to even see if social media or things like that have any impact on our schools. So it's research. It's looking at how we actually have public safety dollars. It's mental health resources. Resources are another big thing. We're seeing that a lot of the individuals needed that kind of help. And so to me, we have an opportunity. There are things that we agree on, like banning bump stocks, but why haven't we done it? And so to me, I think Congress has a real role to play, and I think the American people want to see us play it and do it. And to me, those are some of the areas. I'm actually a co-sponsor of major pieces of legislation that actually deal with those things. Resources, public safety, access to guns, and then lastly, research.
Mr. Walker, how would you deal with the student's question of whether gun restrictions are needed in the country?
Well, I would tell that student that the founders of America wrote the Second Amendment because it was the second most important amendment next to the first. And so gun ownership is a key to our freedom. Gun ownership by the citizen is a key. And I'm not in favor of any more regulations. We've got plenty of regulations on the books now, and judges are not locking up people who commit crimes with guns. They're letting them go. And it's funny, I go down and visit some of the roughest neighborhoods in Wilmington to listen to the people. And I pose a hypothetical question to them. I say, look, how would you like it if all the police had guns, but you didn't have, you weren't allowed to own guns? How would you like that? Every single person said, no, I want a gun. Even the poorest neighborhoods in Wilmington, the answer was always the same. And so in Sussex County, where I'm from, everybody says, don't touch my gun. And so that's what I say, don't touch it.
Ralph, right. I had a follow-up to that
question. I have a follow-up question that Mr. Walker just raised. Okay. You can respond to this as well. I was going to ask you both, should the Second Amendment be repealed? You can answer that again if you want to, but you just answered it, I think.
I think I did.
Okay, all right. Congresswoman?
I guess I just wanted to confirm or clarify where you were on guns when you ran against me last time as a Democrat and where you are today and if that's changed. I know the majority of Americans, we're not saying that you have to get rid of the Second Amendment. We're saying that we have to have common sense laws. That's what people are asking for. They're asking for common sense laws. So it's not about law-abiding citizens. People who are gun owners have said, I'll take a background check because I know I'm doing the right thing. It's the people who aren't doing the right thing, or it's the people who maybe need some help that we need to have these things in place. So I don't think it's a matter of the Second Amendment or not right now. It's a matter of what makes common sense.
Mr. Walker, do you want to comment on whether your views have changed on this subject?
I was against guns 2 years ago, and I did some factual meditation, and I realized, we've got to have the Second Amendment. That's from living in an area where gun ownership is a sacred right. And just like abortion, I've changed on that issue also to pro-life. And look, common sense solutions means the end of the Second Amendment. Okay, the Second Amendment was written exactly the way it was written for a reason, and that's for the people to own guns.
All right, another big national issue that's on everyone's mind is health care. So I want to ask you both whether you would support a national health care for all plan of some kind. National health care for all. Mr. Walker?
Well, I'll support national health care for all as long as it is in the form of education, teaching people how to take care of themselves right, how to eat right, how to exercise, how to rest. You do those three things, you don't need to go to the doctor. So this whole health care thing is one of the biggest scams of American history. We are the most unhealthy nation on earth, I think, or darn close to it. So why is this? Why, if we've got all this medical, we're spending $1 trillion a year on healthcare, trillions, why are we so unhealthy? There's something wrong here.
Congresswoman, support a national health care for all?
I think our ultimate goal is universal health care. I think it shouldn't be a privilege. I think it should be a right. And one of the things that, to me, a lot of people we've talked about, it's like the number one issue that I've heard throughout, whether it's a small business person, whether it is my dental hygienist who was telling me her premiums are $440 a month. Everybody, this is an important issue. And so when I look at it from the lens of access, affordability, and quality. The Affordable Care Act was landmark. It was not a perfect bill. But one of the reasons why I wanted to go to Washington was to protect it, because it helped people who had pre-existing conditions. It protected people based on if you could have your child on the plan even up to age 26. It dealt with our essential benefits. It is important. And so to me, we need to be looking at ways to fix it and to protect it and not to take it away from the 23 million people who never had access to health care before.
Both of you may be interested to know that the Center for Political Communication here at UD has just released a new public opinion poll in Delaware, which shows that 64% of Delawareans support a national health care for all plan. But let me follow up on Congresswoman Rochester's last remark, which is to ask whether both of you think Congress should take some actions to stop the administrative cuts to the Affordable Care Law that are now being conducted by the Trump administration. Should Congress do something to stop those administrative cuts, Mr. Walker?
No, because this is our problem. Free health care is not free, first of all. We all know that we have to pay for it. And what you're doing, just think about this for a second. When you're telling a person that, look, we're going to take care of you for free, you're going to get free health care, what you're doing is incentivizing that person to not take care of themselves and to end up being a ward of the state, because I don't have to worry about eating too much. I don't have to worry about not exercise. I don't have to worry about taking drugs or drinking too much because the state's going to take care of me. That's crazy. That's just crazy.
Congresswoman, what about congressional steps on administrative cuts to the ACA?
You know, as I've watched throughout this past 2 years, what we've seen is like constant sabotage of the Affordable Care Act. Everything from cutting the budget for being able to get the word out to people, for cutting the from cutting the timeline of how much the open enrollment period is, to discourage people from actually signing up. And I do believe that Congress has a role to play. We've actually been playing it. But, you know, I guess I just want to go back to this issue of, you know, people aren't getting it for free. And we're not saying it's free. What we're saying is that everybody should have access, it should be quality, and it should be affordable. That's what we're saying.